Hello and welcome to Conversations on the Avenue with me, Arslan Mohammed, in which we meet and talk to key figures in the art worlds in and around the Middle East. This year, the Arsakal Avenue Gallery Grey Noise turned 10. Now, you might think that this would be a cause for jubilation and celebration on part of the gallery, and especially its owner and director, Omer Butt. But Grey Noise has never chosen the conventional path, and true to form, Omer has decided to reflect on his gallery's supposed failures and challenges, rather than engage in the hubris of a party. Having pondered this for some time now, Omer marks the anniversary of the gallery's founding in Dubai with a sort of non-exhibition entitled Losers Club. It's a remarkable exercise in self-examination critique, in which Omer has literally turned his gallery inside out in search of answers to the questions that have arisen over the past decade. He's engaged in wide-ranging discussions with artists, curators, critics, and gallery visitors to gauge their opinions and thoughts on the quintessential theories of gallery management in the 21st century. He's also invited an eclectic array of artists and thinkers to engage with the gallery space and to come up with responses to his apparently nihilistic statements of intent. It's radical, baffling, inspiring, and quite unlike anything that we've encountered before on Arsakal Avenue. So if you're curious about how galleries work, what they mean, how they function, how they succeed and fail, and what could be their possible future, you need to check out Losers Club at Grey Noise. So to find out more, I called up Omer to talk about failure, success, and what is going through his mind at the moment. Hi Omer, what exactly is Losers Club? Is it an exhibition, an anti-exhibition? What is it? How do you define it?
When I started thinking about the 10th anniversary of the gallery, this was exactly the question of what would it be to show the history of, or just looking back at 10 years. That was the first point of engagement with necessarily the artists that I work with. And what exactly celebration meant for me as an art gallery, as a thinker, as a collaborator. So the question started expanding from artists to anthropologists. Then it all the way went up to curators. The questions which were in my mind, I would, the way we are talking right now, I would just meet them and I would talk to them about what should I do, literally. And those conversations were done over the span of since May last year till I would say I closed planning everything by December last year, because then I was coming to terms with the whole setup.
Right. It's quite a loaded term though, isn't it? Losers Club.
I think I don't have much to say about the term itself, Losers Club, but what it is doing is firstly is that it's, of course, creating friction around the nuances which are attached to a gallery, a commercial art gallery. So you're bleaching out the idea of a conventional art gallery visit. Firstly, from the door, you see Losers Club written without any gallery name. Then you enter, you have no information about what you're going to encounter. You are lost. You are sort of, if you've been to the gallery before, you are definitely confused, because we majorly played with the architecture. And when you asked me the question if it's an exhibition or if it's a non-exhibition, at the end of the day, it's just, I would say, it's just nothing but many things, invisible, both and visible. And yes, we have given certain thought about the displacement of the space. So, for example, my major conversation would be majorly talking about the past failures, commercial failures of the gallery. Yes, I do take some credit on the work that I've done regionally of being important in creating a very unique language through the programming, what kind of artists that I exhibit. So I had developed a sense of expectation with my visitors that, okay, Omer is going to do something, or the artists I represent are going to make a little bit of a unique mode of exhibition making.
So it was kind of like turning the space inside out in a sense.
So what the first thing we came to terms with was that I really would love to open up a having people to experience the hidden parts of the space. So the idea was to reopen up these hidden, more sort of private areas. So when you enter the gallery, you are actually given direction directly into my storage, and then you follow up into my office space, and they are empty. There is nothing in them, and you only see dust. You only see the residue of the previous, let's say, artworks being kept in on racks, so a lot of dust. And in the office, for the matter, library, the artworks that were installed, the nails that were existing, I didn't touch anything. So basically, at the end, what you are looking is a sense of dislocation, a sense of ambiguity to the core that it's frustrating. And what you're only notating are small texts written on the wall, which were people I invited to come in, and they are not only artists. So the first chapter I started working with was a Spanish artist slash illustrator slash art educator based out of Mexico City and Madrid. His name is Luis Urculo. Luis is someone who works with text and his handwriting. I invited him to Dubai to come and experience these two empty rooms. And what I had done was, architecturally, I had moved all my material from the storage and the office inside the gallery. So basically, I inverted the space. And I closed the gallery space where the exhibitions would take place in the past to public. And they can only access the storage and my office. So Luis did some work with some of his handwriting, and he wrote fiction, which is basically a fiction around poetics of my space. And at the same time, a conversation started 2 years back with a sound artist based in Sydney. His name is Tim Brunages. Tim is, an art educator and a researcher and a PhD candidate working in experimental sound. He's currently just finishing off his PhD in Sydney. And he teaches at the University of Wollongong in Australia. He has developed a very simple yet very sophisticated way of recording or working with live feedback, which translates into a rhythm or an infinite music score. So there are microphones which are in the gallery and in the office, which are constantly taking our sound, and they are projecting it with a little delay into a score, which is us, let's say me talking, walking, tapping, whatever I do. It's just taking the live feed into a little delay in a processor, and the algorithm converts it into a musical score, which is always unpredictable. It's always uncertain because it's always changing. So that is the first major intervention which was done. Of course, it's a project which is organic. It's on, and constantly we are playing with this idea of myself and a few people trying to juggle around, looking at our storage, unsold works, to something which one can do. So I'm fairly opening up that idea of a confused social space, which has or might become relevant once we look at the entire documentation of it.
That's a really fascinating idea. So what you were doing was actually erasing the idea of the gallery itself.
I think it's very interesting that I very consciously, the day I started thinking about this project, I also recalculated what I was doing and what I had done, which is very sentimental. It can be extremely problematic. You can be critical about what you like, you dislike. I very openly show my dissatisfaction to even my artists when I don't like their work, which I think a lot of the people don't appreciate, professionally speaking. My friends who are running galleries, they admire and they love their work. I do too, but at the same time, I feel that my education in the field of fine art and understanding art history has given me that confidence to counter react to failures, to successes, and also to be intuitively aware of where I go wrong. And of course, we make mistakes. And I believe there has been such amazing material written about failure, particularly by artists who've made projects which have failed, which I think is something which, again, you can take in a very positive way. When you think about reading text about failure and artists making performances or painting works which will not work out, and they're considered brave to be shown and say, hey, this is a work which failed, and look, and then people admire it. I am not being very optimistic about that failure. I am completely the other way around. A failure for me is a failure. If we haven't succeeded commercially as a gallery, for me, it's a failure. And it is a problem. And I think that I thought, let's definitely try and rework on these and not linger them and come to the point of a closure. And I'm unfortunately, and we all are surrounded by a very interesting time of in our life, let's say, in an art world context. There are so many failures around us right now as I speak. Art galleries shutting down is become a phenomena. And I think we reached that point also. And I don't hide that. I openly say that, yes, it has been tough. Last few years have been very, very tough because we are running the gallery solely on sales. We don't run a gallery on heritage or inheritance or a secondary market. So for me, these point of departures are really very interesting. I think that when you talked about erasure, I think that was the first thing which I really thought that why, what is gray noise, you know? Why is it, why do I have to just rub that same thing in everybody's face on my 10th anniversary? Why can't I just fool them or confuse them or even get more critique from them? My guest book, which usually you keep outside, that's the only element which is physically present outside in my gallery, where people are leaving comments. And they are really, I think, part of this project because there is only hate.
What sort of comments have you been getting?
They are confused. They are
people confused. People are upset.
They're confused because they, yeah, I think it's not their fault. I'm doing this intentionally. I do not want to feel sympathetic about what I'm doing. My whole project was conversations. The idea was a conversation when it started. What I'm doing with you right now is a conversation. If they are interested, I do a conversation. They leave back with tears, or they leave sad, they leave extremely excited. But it's also a matter of chance and error. And I think that chance is something, if they're around, if I meet them, they really feel extremely encouraged. They feel very excited about it. And most of them left very sad. For instance, a very long comment was written in an hour by a guy who was displaced from Syria out of nowhere the opening March week. He sat in one corner. We noticed him. He was an artist himself, I believe. I don't know him. Never met him. He sat for 1 hour. He wrote me a paragraph, which is in my guest book. And it was just him thinking about his home. And he felt lost. He felt miserable. He wrote to me on that I feel that I am near my home. I'm not somebody who's interested in politics, specifically with my program. My program is much about aesthetics. And I thought, hey, this is it, you know. I made him even more miserable. So it's really a mind game, Arsalan, more than anything. I'm negotiating it day by day.
Because it sounds to me, obviously, very clearly that you are acknowledging in your mind that the gallery is a failure. Yet here you are after 10 years, and these actions that you take clearly are causing reactions. The case of the Syrian artist is a very good case in point, which logically would then prove the point that you aren't entirely a failure.
I think that I also very consciously started talking about the fact that I am interested in creating histories. I'm interested in the idea of history, may it be history of my life, may it be a history of my mobile phone, may it be a history of Dubai, what I'm doing in the art world right now. I think what I'm doing at the moment might have some importance in the next 25 to 30 years' time. I don't know.
Well, especially as failure, I mean, you pointed out a lot of artists do look at failures objectively. They do examine the nature of failure, the consequence of failure. I was talking to Nassan Tur, the Turkish artist here in Berlin the other day, whose last monograph was entitled Failure, and failure is a very big part of his practice. It's very rare for a commercial gallery to honestly embrace a sense of failure and to question it and to explore it and to actually do something physical with it, as you are.
Yeah, I think, going back to Losers Club, I was with my artist sitting in Dubai Mall, Mall of the Emirates, one of the malls in the UAE in Dubai. We were having food in a food court. And I think while sitting there, I asked my artist, am I the only art gallery owner who eats at food courts in Dubai? And he goes, yeah. And I actually thought we were taking the piss or having fun, you know, but I realized I actually was the only one who eats at food court. So, and he said, hey, you're such a loser. And, you know, so basically, but I mean, I'm just saying that I think that I don't take art very seriously sometimes, also, and what we do, because it's such a template, it's such a trap, and it's so obvious. Like the whole routine of opening up a show, inviting collectors to a dinner, and then sitting people next to each other who would make a nice network. I mean, you know, these are templates that we've followed and looked upon. And I honestly think that majority of them don't work out, and we don't speak up about them. Even someone like Jocelyn Wolfe, who wrote this little excerpt recently on ArtNet about his, I believe, 15th anniversary or something. This is this gallerist in Paris, you probably know, where he wrote about that I don't own a Remova and I don't travel business class. I have a cycle. I go to my gallery on a bicycle. You know, like these rhetorics and these point of views are being expressed openly because I think being shabby is the new cool. I don't know.
Have you drawn any fresh conclusions? Have you evolved any new ideas yourself on these terms? Because you are very much associated, grey noise is very much associated with what people will say is conceptual work. So I'm very interested in how you've been thinking about this recently.
I think I'd like to bring in one of my artists again. Fahad Barki is a painter, the only painter in my program, actually, whom I've been working with very closely as a friend and as somebody I really admire as a thinker. We were talking about painting and we were talking about the conceptual. Fahad said something, I might not be able to rephrase it, but the gist of that conversation led up to the idea of what is it that we do as artists or as thinkers or as observers. He said that I look at something and I try to implement it in some form of a visual language. I can either be very simple about that and try and mutate it by the simplicity, or I can complicate it by bringing in references. So when you talk about conceptual art, I mean, directly, Fahad's work might look dead or completely silent. And yes, unfortunately, the term conceptual might get attached to it, or a reference of, let's say, a painter such as Agnes Martin, who's a North American painter, and this artist sitting in Lahore in South Asia. These questions do come in, and then, you know, a Westerner looks into his practice in a different way. But my point here was that Fahad said that it's just something which is very simple, and it plays with his idea of simplicity, of such as basic creating a composition. I have studied conceptual art in art history very closely as an artist myself when I was a student. But I think that I define my program as something which is a lot to deal with detaching art movements also. It's more about the basics and the foundations of what we study in foundation of fine art, maybe. And those foundations come from looking at the histories of civilizations. And then we go into the more recent contemporary times. And of course, what all happened in modernism and postmodernism and all the other European art movements, which unfortunately I wasn't really part of when I was doing my BA because I was in South Asia. I think that I'm also learning about these big words because I'm not playing an art historian's game here also. But so these are my questions. What am I doing? Am I an art historian? Am I pretending to be an artist, trying to make exhibitions and enforce my ideas. And that's something which was very much annoying for us as students, because our tutors were very much enforcing their perceptions and understandings of art histories and implementing them into our art practices. And that's what patronage usually means. And I think these are questions that I'm starting to question now, that what am I doing, you know? So again, yeah. Arsalan, the Losers Club was about that. It was about also rethinking, and say, hey, why the hell was I away from painting for the last 10 years? Why not introduce painting to my program in a more fresher context? So yeah, I mean, I think I might not even have answered your question, because that's what usually these conversations end up becoming, because they are at the end of the day conversations. And there are some people who speak so well, and I really admired that, and how they structure speech. And this is my real big inquiry these days, to study public forums where people talk, because we talk a lot in the art world. And I don't think there is a lot of interesting element coming out of it, unfortunately.
It reminds me of what you were saying just now, the template for a gallery. You have a succession of private views, you have a dinner, you place people next to each other. I would go on to say that the art fair is also suffering from a withering of that template of the art fair, with the art fair talks panels. And you mentioned now you enjoy engaging in forums. What do you make of the current art fair model? Is this something you feel that Grey Noise up to this point has been anxious to get involved with? Have you been involved with many art fairs? What are your thoughts on working with art fairs?
I think that I started taking them as venues of creative exchanges. That's what I understood them as a young gallery. When I was very young, I understood that, okay, you can present an artist's practice or an idea or a concept or a proposal the way we've done. We haven't done art fairs at that level where we have a roster which is well ripe and has a market flow. So when I'm looking at the emerging art market, the art market I'm associated to, I felt that we presented the best as we could. We presented the most well-thought-out ideas, but they kind of started getting attention, and there were ups and downs. Art fairs for art galleries have become a necessity in the past few years. Primarily, it's also geographically very important where you're located. We thought us traveling to Europe for Grey Noise made sense, because we were maybe attracting a particular art which might not exist in this market, an eye which understands an empty wall with one, two lines on the wall drawn and saying that this is art. And we were convinced, I as an art dealer was 100% convinced, and of course, amazing feedback that yes, there were people who were looking at wall drawing as a form of practice, as a form of acquisition, maybe private or a public collection. I think that my take on art fairs is at the moment that it's, as I said, is the moment of reevaluation. I'd never discouraged myself of not doing art fairs. It's just the fact that we felt that we needed a little bit of shift in our gallery program first, and then might address that shift in a more fresher way and a fresher perspective in an art fair. I have nothing against art fairs. They are exhausting for a gallery sitting in Dubai to travel all the way, and especially with the costs of shipping to the fair. So very good ripe example is Art Basel. Which we did twice in Basel. I mean, it is a milestone for a gallery to be invited to do that fair, because you have to go through a very rigorous process of being selected through your proposal. You're almost applying for an Ivy League school, basically, in short. And of course, they are 300-400 applicants, and you have 13 to 16 places for you to represent your program. And then I felt that we were we succeeded in every angle of people appreciating the, from the curator to the selection committee to the more sophisticated art dealers who are on the selection committee, the likes of Tim Neuger, Eva Present-Huber, to Sadie Cole. Everybody came, spoke to us, were very convinced that we have a very good outlook onto what we're doing. But, you know, these were very positive energies that we bought back. And yes, we sold, but we would never recover our cost, which would be something which would become a problem for a gallery my scale. But as I said, that we are solely running our gallery on sales. We are not somebody with big partnerships or have investors investing in us and expecting us to churn money back and doing excessive amount of fairs. So what I started doing was that I started selecting. I started doing more. I was doing the main fairs. Yes, I did FIAC, I did Frieze, I did Basel, and yes, we had our favorites, where I felt that they were more human, more interactive. So it's and everybody has a different take on how they feel. So Liste in Basel is predominantly my favorite fair because it's just the fact that it's a fair which has amazing quality. There is good energy. There is a sense of it just is a magnet for a lot of intuitive eyes, younger collectors, whereas Art Basel is more of a brand. It's more about that, hey, you've upgraded yourself to business class now while you were flying coach, you know?
So exactly, yeah.
You know, so, but I deeply respect these grounds. I think I completely, I endorse them and I always will, but, we just started slowing down because we were not selling very well. And, but at the same time, the quality of our presentations weren't really going bad, but we were not doing what a lot of galleries do, is they find a comfort with a particular route they take, with a particular work they take. And that is research which desires more money to be invested in. That we did, what I did, I would research, meet, go to a city, talk to curators, meet collectors, meet the people of what is the trend, what. So these are the market trends that, of course, all these think tanks, which are your marketing side of art worlds, talk about. But emerging market always struggles. This is where I felt that we weren't really very successfully selling our idea. So, and then the amount of show face game, which is very important in the art world, that, okay, you have to do six fairs and you have to show your face six times to a particular person. And then they will say, hey, okay, you've done this fair X amount of times. We find that you are not somebody who is doing a one-off game, you know. So building confidence. I think we did that. We did that very successfully, and we achieved critical success. But at the end of the day, we are really the voice of a young artist.
Once this project is done, what next for you and Grey Noise?
The idea is that all these archiving of these interventions will be hopefully be published in a book and maybe released in some form of information online to a select audience, because I think that it's an internal research for me. Raja Khalid, an artist that I represent, she made a presentation, which was a lecture performance, which she presented to a small group of people, which was called Palace Gossip, and that also happened in this while. And then the next project that I'm thinking about is to work with my inventory of works, those who are unsold, from our storage. And I have asked a very dear collaborator, a friend of mine, to work and present it in a different light. And we've shared that inventory with her, and that would be the next presentation opening up on the 12th of May.
That was Umar Butt from Grey Noise Gallery. And Losers Club is on, such as it is, at the Grey Noise Gallery in Elsticale Avenue at the moment. But for now, it just remains for me to thank Umar for his time, Elsticale Avenue's wonderful team for their recording help, and of course to you for listening. Keep your ears open for our next edition, out next month. Till then, all the best from all of us here at Elsticale Avenue.